Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business, and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome. Well, I am pleased to welcome two returning guests today. My first guest was featured alongside women such as Gloria Steinem and Marianne Williamson in Sharon Stone and Emmanuel Ittier's documentary film, Femme, about women healing the world. And Reverend Dr. Karen Tate joins me in just a moment to discuss her work and latest book, Goddess Calling, Inspirational Messages and Meditations of Sacred Feminine Liberation Theology. And Andrew Gross will close the show today. He's the author of 6 New York Times bestsellers, actually at number one. He had 5 bestsellers with James Patterson. He co-authored with him. And his new book is called Everything to Lose. He's known for crafting gripping stories around ordinary people who have to make those split second decisions that can change our lives forever. First of all, let me introduce the Reverend Dr. Karen Tate to you. She has been on the show before. You can catch the previous interview. I think it was 2008 when I last spoke with Karen, so it's been quite a while. But you can catch that at conversationslive.net. And Karen is an independent scholar, speaker, radio host, author. She's a sacred tour leader and social justice activist. So she is a busy lady. For 3 decades, her work's been driven by her passion for travel, comparative religions, ancient cultures, and the resurgence in the rise of the feminine consciousness. Her work integrates spirituality, feminism, and uplifting women. And she's written several books, including Sacred Places of Goddess, 108 Destinations, and Walking an Ancient Path, Rebirthing Goddess on Planet Earth. And that was a 2008 finalist in the National Best Books Awards. And Karen's latest book is called Goddess Calling, as I said, Inspirational Messages and Meditations of Sacred Feminine Liberation Theology. Karen, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Vicki. I'm so glad to be back with you.
Yes, it's been a while. I didn't realize it had been so long since we last talked.
Believe me, time seems to be flying.
Scary. So I want to just get this out of the way up front, because I'd never really come across the word theology before. I looked it up. I couldn't find it in any dictionary. But there are explanations of it on the internet. So it's theology versus theology. Tell us what that actually means.
Well, it's theology with an A. You know, it's more about theology from the feminine perspective. You know, it's herstory. It's the spirituality of herstory. It's the feminine face of God. It's the woman's story that so often is not told or taught or understood in our patriarchal society. I think that's probably a kind of a mainstream way to explain it.
Yeah, and I did look it up, as I said, on the internet. It was coined apparently in 1974, this word. Not made it yet into the dictionaries, but, you know, may at some point, as words tend to do. So we didn't talk very much last time about your background and what led you to doing what you're doing now. So let's just go back a little bit, because you were raised Catholic. What was the turning point for you towards Goddess?
Well, I'll tell you, yeah, I lived in that sort of Catholic Baptist bubble in the South, you know, in New Orleans, and I never met anyone that wasn't a Catholic or Baptist, to tell you the truth. You know, it's pretty concentrated down there that's the majority of folks you're going to find. And it actually took getting out of that bubble, moving out of Louisiana, to really sort of open my eyes. Because, you know, sometimes you don't even know the questions to ask. If what you're living in, you aren't challenged to use critical thinking or, you know, you just accept it as normal because, you know, you don't see or hear anything else that might get you scratching your head and say, hey, but wait a minute. So, you know, I moved to California with my husband of 30 years. We'll be married 30 years this year. And I discovered the feminine face of God. And before that, the closest thing we had was Mary, you know, the mother of Jesus. My grandmother had statues of Mary in the garden. She prayed novenas to Mary, you know. You know, Mary is about the only feminine face and spirituality that you know that so many of us are allowed to have, you know, and she is sort of this, you know, passive, you know, benign female. You know, she's not one that's going to make waves. She's not a rowdy, you know, kind of female who's going to be out there with picket signs, you know, fighting for the minimum wage for women.
Right, right.
And so, you know, I come to California and discover that all of these feminine faces of God that had been denied me my entire life, and I started scratching my head saying, hey, wait a minute, what do these mean for women? Why is it so important that we understand who they were, that they're 30,000 years old, and what have we lost not having these feminine faces of God? So I started a personal journey. At first, it was personal. You know, what did it mean to me to discover that there's more than Mary out there? You know, there's more female divinity out there than Mary. And at first, you start to see how these goddess archetypes allow women to get beyond this narrow little box that patriarchy or the Abrahamic religions want to put women in. Because, you know, goddess role models, goddess archetypes, you know, these are powerful archetypes. You know, we call them archetypes from womb to tomb. You know, they are everything. They are the creatrix of the world. They are the cycle of life. They can be a mother. They can be a warrioress. They can be a nurturer. They can, you know, with goddesses as your archetype, you can be absolutely anything. And it encourages women to become their authentic self, you know, to not be stifled or hindered or hide their light under a bushel. You know, so it became personal for me at first, you know, to find that empowerment. And then you sort of take it outside yourself and realize what those values mean for the world.
Well, I read that you traveled five continents in search of these sacred sites of goddess, and I didn't know this about you, but you actually started writing because you were writing travel logs about finding these sites.
Well, yeah, I did, because I discovered the many feminine faces of God across all these, you know, all these continents. So I married my two loves of travel with this newfound spirituality, because, you know, when you stand in these ancient sites, it is a, you know, it makes an incredible impact on your psyche. And, you know, here in the United States, we're also deprived of the wonderful museums that hold all the goddess artifacts, like the British Museum, the Louvre Museum, the Anatolia Museum. You know, I could go on and on and on. We just don't have those sorts of museums here that show us about this ancient herstory. And so, yes, I started out, because it had such an impact on me, I started out sharing goddess to people through the lens of sacred travel. And, you know, it's sort of the difference between, you know, like if with a recipe, you can read the recipe, but if you taste the stew, you know, you get the full ramification of it, you know.
Right.
started taking people to these sacred sites, and I'm about ready to do another tour to Turkey next May of 2015.
Yeah, you have a book coming out about that too, right? About goddesses?
Well, no, that's sort of on the drawing board.
Okay.
I was considering doing that when I did Goddess Calling instead. But I think the time is coming to do the Sacred Sites of Turkey book, yes.
So tell me at what point you decided to take this huge passion that you have, and you've already accumulated a great deal of knowledge. What point did you take that to to the pulpit, if you will. What point did you take this seriously as a vocation?
Well, you know, I became a social justice activist, women's rights activist, because I started to understand that losing a feminine face of God all of these, you know, years ago, we still have ramifications of that today. And that's what I wanted to have women and men understand. Because, you see, if we have a mythology that is only a male god or dominated by a male god, then we end up with a society that has male leadership, which we have had for way too long. It's called patriarchy. It's rule of the father. And it means that if you're not male, if you're not God, then everything else is in service to men and God. And that leaves women as second-class citizens. That leaves women working in that little box where, you know, they have men controlling their lives, they have institutions controlling their lives, they don't even have autonomy over their whole life. We believe that you can actually connect the dots to having lost the feminine face of God and things like domestic violence, women not getting equal pay for equal work, infanticide, female genital mutilation, human trafficking, you know, the fact that women do 80% of the work around the world and have 20% of the assets. The reason we have less than 20% of women's leadership in academia, in politics, in corporate America, in religious authority. I mean, some people still believe, you know, women should be barefoot and pregnant. Some people still believe that men should dictate if women have access to contraception or abortion. You know, some people still believe, you know, women should hide their bodies in burqas. I mean, we could go on and on here, but you see the oppression, the exploitation. You know, women are cheap labor. Women are baby makers, you know. Women are supposed to support men in everything that they do. And oftentimes when we want more equality, we're called feminazis, you know, or somehow we're, you know, disparaged in some way.
Well,
you know?
So I was going to ask you about that. So, you know, some people might say, well, you know, you're against males, which I know you're not. But they might say, you know, you're just another screaming woman about, you know, liberation and, hey, that happened, you know, 30 years ago or whatever, 40 years ago. But obviously it hasn't, because we still do have some inequalities, excuse me. I'm having trouble speaking this morning. But so what do you say to people who give you that kind of comeback?
Well, I say a couple things. First of all, you know, including, you know, when I interviewed Noam Chomsky on my show, you know, we talked about this at length, and you can find that in the archives of my show, Voice of the Sacred Feminine. You know, he said that, you know, the powers that be always rail against anyone who threatens their authority, and feminism threatens patriarchy. You know, feminism teaches women that they can be more, that they can want more, that it's okay to want a fair society, that we should have a nurturing, caring, and sharing world, that, you know, there should be a better quality of life, that it, you know, we shouldn't accept as normal that 1% of the people on the planet hold all the wealth while the rest of us fight for scraps at the bottom of the heap. But unfortunately, you know, the media is controlled by the corporations. The corporations are the 1% for the most part. And, you know, it's like a disinformation campaign, you know. They disparage or discredit opposing voices, you know, people that would challenge their authority, challenge their control, challenge their leadership, because they want things to be exactly the same. They want to continue to exploit women, oppress women.
So,
and I guess I would say that there are more and more men every day calling themselves feminists, because especially the way we find the world today, we have a disappearing middle class. You know, there's more than just women feeling the pinch these days, you know, and as men start to feel the pinch of the 1%, they start to realize what women have been talking about all along. And it's not about being angry and wanting to take over the world and subjugate men. You know, as I, you know, mentioned before, or I think you did, you know, I've been married to a wonderful man for 30 years. I know, you know, tons of men who call themselves feminists. This is about partnership. You know, we really want partnership on this planet, and not just between the genders. You know, we want partnership between countries. We want partnership between human beings and the earth. You know, we want partnership between corporations and their employees, so employees don't continue to be exploited, or, you know, poor smaller countries aren't exploited by bigger, more powerful countries. We want balance. We want equality. We want justice. Mm-hmm. And, you know, how can anyone say they don't, really?
Well, I want to ask you more about balance. I want to ask you, I'm going to give you a quote that I read in Richard Branson's book last week about this very subject. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I'll ask you about that. My guest is Reverend Dr. Karen Tate. Her book is called Goddess Calling: Inspirational Messages and Meditations of Sacred Feminine Liberation Theology. Please do stay with us. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Let's see if I guess that this just isn't working.
Knowing you have a great idea for a book is one thing, writing it another. So what's stopping you? Maybe you can't find time. Maybe you don't know where to begin. Maybe you wrote a couple of chapters, then disappeared down a rabbit hole. Or maybe you'd rather someone else write it for you. Partnering with the right coach or ghostwriter can make all the difference between talking about your book and finishing your book. As an award-winning writer and strategic consultant, Vicky St. Clair's storytelling credits span from business, health, self-help, and memoir to New York Times and USA Today best-selling anthologies. Vicky partners with people just like you at the exact level you need, whether you need a little encouragement, editorial guidance, or full-blown ghostwriting and consulting services. If you're serious about telling the story you know is inside you, stop procrastinating. Let's get your story down on paper. Contact Vicky today. Email Vicky at VickySt.Clair.com or call 1-800-495-7617. See more about Vicky and her work at VickySt.Clair.com.
Next week on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, Misadventures of a Parenting Yogi with Brian Leaf. And Dr. Kaufman rejoins us to share important information on why your breathing troubles may have been misdiagnosed. Join us every Monday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern, right here on Alternative Talk 1150. See more information at conversationslive.net.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.
Real people, real life, real radio. Really? Alternative Talk 1150.
And welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And my guest right now is Reverend Dr. Karen Tate, and her new book is called Goddess Calling: Inspirational Messages and Meditations of Sacred Feminine Liberation Theology. And we were talking about balance before the break, and I wanted to bring this into the conversation because I was reading Richard Branson, Sir Richard Branson's book last week, and it's called Screw Business as Usual. And he mentions Karen, goddess Gaia, and talks in there about one of his friends who's also a very successful businessman who talks a lot about Gaia and the balance of the earth and how we treat our earth is basically the state that we're in as a human society. So I wonder if you'd talk a little bit about your perspective on that.
Well, you know, you can go back to the fact that, depending on how you interpret the Bible gives men license to dominate the earth and everything on it. So that's, you know, that's Gaia herself. You know, we see she's being poisoned, fracked. You know, we have poison water, poison air, you know, development beyond what we should be developing. Growth beyond what we should be trying to grow. And, you know, nature herself, Mother Nature, Gaia, if we go back to our high school science classes or grade school science classes, we learn about ecosystems. And you throw ecosystems out of balance and you wreak havoc. And, you know, she, you know, as Mother Nature, she teaches us the importance of balance. You know, the ancient Egyptians taught us about the importance of balance. Otherwise, you have chaos. Well, we have incredible imbalance here on the earth, especially imbalance when it comes to income disparity, when it comes to domination and exploitation. You know, our patriarchy seems to be obsessed with domination, exploitation, and we see it across the globe, you know, as the 1% dominates the 99%, as women are discriminated against. Branson and his friend aren't the only ones talking about this. Bill Clinton came on the David Letterman show and was talking about how corporations and governments have to create win-win situations. And that's another phrase that you can, you know, substitute for partnership. You know, what I, you know, mentioned just a couple minutes ago before the break. You know, we have to create win-win situations with the earth. We have to have balance. We have to have win-win situations in every relationship we have, whether it be balancing the masculine and feminine within ourselves or getting toxic people out of our lives so that we have supportive environments, you know, in our government, in the workplace. You know, we are desperately in need of balance and partnership. Those things go hand in hand.
Yeah, and it is good that men are joining this conversation because, as you said, this isn't a feminism rant here. It's a real situation.
It is. I mean, Jimmy Carter just put out a book, A Call to Action, and maybe some of your listeners have been seeing him make the rounds. If I could just read a couple sentences of his that are on the back of his book. He says, there is a system of discrimination extending far beyond any small geographical region to the entire globe. It touches every nation, perpetuating and expanding the trafficking in human slaves, body mutilation, even legitimized murder on a massive scale. This system is based on the presumption that men and boys are superior to women and girls, and it is supported by some male religious leaders who distort the Holy Bible, the Quran, and other sacred texts to perpetuate their claim that females are, in some basic way, inferior to them, unqualified to serve God on equal terms. Many men disagree but remain quiet in order to enjoy the benefits of their dominant status. This false premise provides a justification for sexual discrimination in almost every realm of secular and religious life. Some men even cite this premise to justify physical punishment of women and girls. Contributing to the abuse of women and girls is an acceptance of violence, from unwarranted armed combat to excessive and biased punishment for those who violate the law.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there are men, you know, by, you know, the scores, you know, out there talking about this as well. You know, Desmond Tutu, the elders, the Pope has come out, you know, talking about let's put social issues aside, let's take care of the poverty out there. You know, so again, you know, we have poverty because there's imbalance in our economic system, you know.
Right, right.
We have imbalance between the genders, you know. This is all about imbalance. And if we could understand that, if we could write the balance, then everyone's quality of life would suddenly become much much better, more what they deserve.
And I like what you say. You know, we started this with Richard Branson talking about how we're off balance. We're off balance as a culture, as a society, because we're not taking care of our planet. But I like what you say. And I'm paraphrasing this, there's no goddess as nature teaches us, there's no such thing as the trickle-down effect. That trickle-down, as in economics, doesn't work. Things grow from the ground up after we've prepared the soil, nurtured it, tended it. Then it reaps benefits, prosperity, and abundance, which is, you know, I think something that we maybe lost over the last couple of three generations.
Well, also, too, that's a great example of how nature teaches us, you know, gives us a template for living, you know, this idea that Republicans have of trickle down, you know, let's wait for the rich to throw us a few shekels and, you know, we'll all be fine. Well, we know that doesn't work. You know, their capacity for hoarding wealth just gets bigger and bigger, and it never trickles down. They just exploit their workers more and more, you know, like Walmart employees who, you know, don't even make enough money, you know, they have to apply for food stamps. I mean, it's insane. But, you know, this whole idea of, you know, of having to have balance, you know, and Earth teaching us that. I mean, a lot of goddess mythology teaches us really how to live, and we've lost that. In fact, when goddess was on the earth and worshipped by most of humanity, we had more of a we and us mentality as opposed to an I and me mentality. I mean, just think, you know, before Ayn Rand, before Gordon Gekko on Wall Street, greed was one of the deadly sins. Well, what happened to that? You know, we used to think it was important to be well-educated. Well, now, you know, you have people like Sarah Palin, you know, knocking people who are educated. It's almost a badge of honor to, you know, to be dumbed down. You know, our society has just been tweaked in the most insidious ways, and it is really hurting the most of us. We have to get back to valuing education, valuing balance, valuing partnership, taking care of one another, and recognizing that the idea of nurturing, whether it's the soil that grows the plants that we eat, or it's our communities, you know, our children, our workplace, that, you know, we won't have thriving, sustained growth without nurturing whatever it is we want to be, you know, healthy. And
let me ask you this then, Karen. So, you know, you're talking about we have the patriarch society. We'd be better off with a matriarch. Can the two not coexist? Can we not have a marriage of patriarch and matriarch?
Well, I didn't say we'd be better off with matriarch. Let me explain. We aren't looking for to do away with the patriarchy. We are looking to bring the patriarchy in balance. You know, we are looking to complement the patriarchy. I mean, right now, society values domination, exploitation, okay? That doesn't work. We want to bring in matriarchal ideas to counter that, to temper that, ideas of partnership, collaboration, negotiation, so that we have win-win situations, so that we don't have winner and loser situations. You know, we want to value being in service to one another, not just exploiting one another. You see what I mean?
Yes, definitely.
Because any people with absolute power, I mean, I believe, you know, absolute power corrupts absolutely. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So we need a balance of masculine and feminine, patriarchy and, you know, we call it egalitarian is what we call it. Or one of our scholars in the community now has coined the term equalitarian. You know, so that instead of us being a society that thinks nurturing and caring and sharing is weak, you know, we realize that it's a necessity.
Right. On that note, let's take a very quick break and we'll come back. I have a couple more questions before we let you go today. Goddess Calling is the book, Inspirational Messages and Meditations of Sacred Feminine Liberation Theology. And Reverend Dr. Karen Tate is my guest. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Finally surfaced above doubts, feeling above this, she came around, cause she's a goddess, finally surfaced. Now you're back, trying to claim her, cause she's gone, and now without her you are alone, cause she's a goddess, you should have served.
If you love dogs, tune in to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, live every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. We'll talk about everything dog and interview authors, experts, and amazing organizations, both locally and nationally. And don't even get me started on the pet food industry. I'm Julie Forbes. Find us online at www.dogradioshow.com and also as a free podcast on iTunes. The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, an evolved perspective on life with dogs.
Do something different with your spare time. Give baby animals at Paws a fresh start. With the assistance of caring volunteers, Paws helps hundreds of orphaned and sick kittens and puppies each year. Join us and save lives. Become a Paws foster care volunteer. For more information, visit paws.org or 425-787-2500. Paws.org or 425-787-2500.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Join us live every Monday at noon on Alternative Talk 1150 or stream live from conversationslive.net.
Outside the box, outside the norm, inside your radio. Alternative Talk 1150.
And welcome back, everyone. This is Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest is Reverend Dr. Karen Tate, her book, Goddess Calling. And we've been talking a lot about the importance of balance and partnership to restore the balance of the earth and our culture and the patriarch-matriarch situation. And Karen, you were featured in the movie Femme, Women Healing the World, produced by Sharon Stone and Emmanuel Etier, and it featured also people like Gloria Steinem, Marianne Williamson. And I just want to mention a quote that I heard Marianne Williamson say, and it kind of ties into what we've been talking about. She said, and I'm paraphrasing, that as individuals, we have a conscience, but collectively, our capacity as Americans for denial and grandiosity is beyond laughter. It has become dangerous. Would you comment on that, please?
Well, you know, I think we live in an entitlement society. You know, we don't have role models anymore, like Martin Luther King. We don't hear the Dalai Lama speak so much. You know, we don't have leaders that are out there telling us that we have an obligation to take care of one another. You know, that that it shouldn't all be about domination and exploitation. And I think we are trained to be uber consumers. You know, that's what the message that you know, the little talking box in our homes tell us. You know, we have to have all the latest gadgets.
That's
and,
right.
You know, we have to, you know, have all we don't value our personal development anymore. You know, we don't value our educations. We don't value how we are in service to humanity anymore. It's all about how much can we acquire. You know, how many people have more money than they will be able to spend in a lifetime, but it's still not enough. They still want to rape the earth and exploit their employees. You know, we really just have to stop and think about what our values are, because I think all we hear from some news outlets is hate and divisiveness. And, that does nothing to bring us together as human beings, you know.
Right.
We just don't even hear the teachings of Jesus anymore. Even those have been co-opted. Because, you know, the teachings of Jesus and the teachings of Goddess go hand in glove.
Right. So we only have a minute or so, like 2 minutes here, Karen, but I want to just end this on a positive note here. You have a chapter in the book called Hope and Fearlessness. What would you like us to take away from that chapter?
Well, I'd like people to know that ideas are the most powerful thing there is. And, you know, when and that change does happen, but we all have to get up off the couch and stop just bitching on Facebook, you know. I would say
Do you think we've become too complacent that way?
I think so. I think we have. You know, we think if we bitch on Facebook, well, we've sort of done all we can do. And, you know, and I think we are patriarchy conditions us to feel hopeless, as if patriarchy cannot be defeated. But patriarchy is crumbling. And I think the more of us who find something that we are passionate about, actually gets out there and does something, whether it's working for human rights or immigrant rights or hospice work or animal rights or helping fight against voter suppression, battered women's shelters. Maybe it's the old lady down the street who her Social Security isn't enough, you know, so that she has food by the end of the month. You know, send a little bit of the money that you'd maybe send spend at Starbucks on something, you know, a worthwhile cause. You know, I think we can all make a difference, because if we just think back to the fact that it wasn't that long ago black men couldn't play baseball, that women, women couldn't vote before 1920. Women in Turkey could actually vote before women in the United States could. Who thought we would have a black president? Things do change. You know, if you were in ancient Greece and you were a pagan, you never dreamed there would be a day that Christianity would be such a dominant force on the planet.
Right,
and if you
right.
were a Christian and, you know, you were in the Colosseum, you wondered if your faith was ever going to take hold. So things do change. There is an ebb and flow.
Right.
And I think if most of us who believe in the ideals we're talking about today actually walk that talk, actually get out there and do something to make the world a better place, we're going to see a change in the world. I really do believe we are.
Well, I thank you for sharing your expertise with us. I know you are so passionate about this. And there's another chapter in the book called No Free Lunch. It's not easy. There's a price to pay, but it can be done. And the book is called Goddess Calling, Inspirational Messages and Meditations of Sacred Feminine Liberation Theology. And Reverend Dr. Karen Tate, thanks so much for being with us today. Appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Vicki. It's been my pleasure. Anytime.
And you can find out more about Karen's work at karentate.com and check out her website. She's got also has a radio show where she talks about this too. So you can find all of that at karentate.com. We are going to shift gears here. We're going to talk to New York Times bestselling thriller writer Andrew Gross. He also is a returning guest today. And you're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Please do stay tuned.
Did you know that capsizing boats and people falling overboard account for over 70% of boating fatalities? 80% of those fatalities occur on boats under 26 feet and on boats with operators who've had no formal boating instruction. 50% of all boating accidents involve alcohol. Be smart this summer. Know who you're boating with. Wear a Coast Guard approved life jacket and don't drink and boat. This message is brought to you by supporters of Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair and the JMB Group, who wish you safe boating fun.
OMG! Grammar abuse is no LOL. Hire a copywriter today and make sure your business communications rise above the crowd and deliver the results you need. Call 800-495-7617 today. BTW, IMHO, copywriters rule. Call 800-495-7617. BFN.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to BioClean, the great folks that clean up the mess, we cover the world of animals. This week, June 8th, we welcome Bob Vella from Canine and Feline Caviar back to the show. Bob will join us in the studio to talk all about great nutrition for our dog and cat friends. Plus, we'll talk by phone to Bothell Feed Center in the North End and Sierra Fish and Pets in the South End, two great stores that carry the Canine Caviar line. Join us for Martha Norwalk's Animal World Sunday morning. morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Next week on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, Misadventures of a Parenting Yogi with Brian Leaf. And Dr. Kaufman rejoins us to share important information on why your breathing troubles may have been misdiagnosed. Join us every Monday at noon Pacific time, 3 p.m. Eastern, right here on Alternative Talk 1150. See more information at conversationslive.net.
Hi, this is Vicki St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicki St. Clair.
Ahead of the talk radio curve, naturally. Alternative Talk 1150.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. You are listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And I'm very pleased to welcome back Andrew Gross. He's the author of New York Times bestsellers Reckless, The Blue Zone, The Dark Tide, Don't Look Twice, Eyes Wide Open, 15 Seconds, No Way Back, and his latest book, Everything to Lose. He's also co-author of 5 number one bestsellers with James Patterson. He's an international bestseller with his novels now published in 25 countries. And I'm very pleased to have welcome back Andrew Gross. Andrew, welcome.
Thank you, Vicki. You never sound as smart or as accomplished as when someone's reading your bio. So, as I was listening to it, I'm going, boy. You know.
I've experienced the same thing. It's like, boy, I sound good there. What happened?
Did I do all that? Really?
Yeah.
Anyway, nice to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, and we were just chatting before we came live, and you write a book a year, you say. Is that an intense pace for you?
No, I don't think of it that way. It's interesting. Most of the people I know who are in sort of commercial thriller fiction are working on 2 projects or more. I used to work with Patterson. He's obviously got, you know, 2 handfuls in work at any time. But it sort of seems that the people who may not be paid a whole lot are working on multiple projects in order to obviously, you know, pay the health insurance,
right.
The people who are being paid mega money are working on them for obvious reasons. So I'm in one of these comfort zones where I can sort of, you know, nicely bring out a book a year. And no, you know, you sort of get into the pace of how to bring these things out. And I guess I know how to do it. And it takes about 8 or, you know, I'm actually finishing one up this week as for the next one. And it's, I think I started writing it December 1.
Right.
So that's about, what is that, six to 7 months,
yeah,
maybe for the first
months,
draft,
yeah.
And then 2 or 3 months of editing and a month or, you know, 2 of publisher prepping it up, and that's how they come out.
Right. So I want to just ask you this, because we talked last time, and you said that you worked in the clothing industry for a long time, always
mm-hmm.
thought you had a book in you, but did you ever think your career would take off like it has taken off?
No, absolutely not. And believe me, it's taken off nicely, but I certainly aspire to taking off higher on the bestseller list than I've gotten, you know, I mean, you know, but it's, you know, the truth is when I originally stopped work, I switched from working with Patterson to my own stuff, I got a 3-book deal based off of an outline. And I hadn't even written the first book yet, which is very rare in the publishing business. But it was a very detailed outline that I'd learned from working with Patterson.
Right, right.
But then all of a sudden, they sort of bumped me up to 6 more books. So I basically had a 9-book deal from the start with HarperCollins. And
wow.
every book was untitled book number 2, untitled book number 3, untitled book number 4, obviously up to 9. And I would stare at this contract and I go, I would clean it up on the radio, but how am I ever going to write these books, and where am I going to think of these ideas, nonetheless, the titles? But somehow I've decided that the imagination expands to your desire, your need for money, or something like that.
Right.
So I don't know. Here we are. I'm now finishing my 9th solo book, and been doing this now for 15 books, you know, between the two, and
Right.
It's sort of hard to think of it that way.
Well, HarperCollins must have had great faith in you to give you a 9-book deal. That's pretty unusual to get so many books on one deal like
that. No, it is. It is. And it was an expression of faith. And whether or not I've returned that fully, I don't know. But it's, you know, we've made a go of it. And
right.
The books continue to sell a bit. So,
let's talk about this latest one, Everything to Lose. I am about 3/4 of the way through it. I have not finished, I have to confess. But it's pulling me through. I want to know what happens. And you took this, your protagonist is a female. So first of all, I want to know just how difficult is it for you to write the female voice?
Well, it's not difficult at all. As a matter of fact, I originally outlined this character as a male, and my publishers, both in the United States and in England, insisted that I change it to a female. And for whatever reason, I think four of my books have been written in a female voice.
Right.
And I'm probably one of the fairly few guys who, one, are doing it, and two, are doing it with some regularity. I don't fully,
and doing it well.
Yeah, thank you. And doing it, I think, pretty well, yeah. And I don't really get why, other than I do like my books to have some emotional resonance at the end. They all seem to. I write about families, and I write about regular people that are put in peril, and, you know, sort of people you would look in the mirror and recognize yourself in, and you know, not over-the-top people or whatever. And so I through that resonance, seems to be easier to come through a female lens than a male lens. And the truth is, I've been working with or for strong-willed females, and in fact, living with them my whole life. And, you know, coming out of the industry I came out of, it was populated with strong, intense, you know, pushy women. But I don't think my women are that vain anyway. But they're are that in that vein. But I think they're. You know, I've just been around them my whole life. So to me, it's kind of a natural thing.
Right. So I've read that you've said that the hardest thing for you is coming up with great ideas. Executing is always easy, you say, but setting up that idea and setting up the project. So tell us a little bit about this book and where you got this idea for this story.
Well, you know, the truth is, all of my books are sort of a triangulation of maybe 3 or 4 ideas, and that's how they sort of, you know, build together. They form a story. But this one, I guess, the first sentence of the book is, that basically every life is the story of a single mistake, and then what happens after. And Hillary Cantor makes that mistake, whether it's for the right reason, which is protecting her own child. And basically, she's a single, dedicated mom who's got a kid with Asperger's syndrome, who's hanging on by the threads to life after she was divorced financially. And then she goes into free fall, where one day she comes in and her entire division is closed down, and she's living in a house that's underwater financially. She has her son in an expensive school, which is doing great things for her son, and she just can't hold on to this life anymore, and she's about to sort of, you know, she's totally on the edge, and then through an accident, she's driving along and comes across this accident and rushes to help, and what does she find on the seat but $500,000 in cash, and so the real question is, what do you do with that money? And is it, you know, that money can salvage her son's life? And, of course, she doesn't take it at first, as you know, but it is a thriller. So we all sort of know that eventually she'll come back for the money. And clearly the money comes with some with a wave of very dire consequences. But it also sort of weaves through, the story weaves through a couple of other things. One of them are, This idea of CU children, CU standing for callous and unemotional. I think a lot of people have seen The Bad Seed in the movies, and they remember what that sort of is when kids just don't feel conscience or remorse the same way as others, and behavioralists think is the building block of psychopaths. And, you know, also coupled in with a 20-year-old murder that took place in Staten Island that becomes really the reason why this money is even there in the first place. And then ultimately, is the story of how Hurricane Sandy, Superstorm Sandy, weaves through this story almost to the point that it's not even the backdrop of the story. It almost becomes a character. And if you continue on in the book, you'll see that really the hurricane itself provides sort of the clue that that sets this whole thing in motion and points its finger at the bad guy in the book. So,
right.
You know, there you go. I guess there's three or four themes or ideas that weave together into how a novel gets formed.
Yeah, and Publishers Weekly says the climax is heart-stopping. So I'm looking forward to getting to the end, not because I want to get it done, but it's pulling me along.
I didn't take it that way.
So one of the things you advise writers is to invest your reader in your hero's plight within the first 10 pages. And you did that on a couple of different levels in this book. How do you make sure that happens, Andrew?
I don't know. You know, I think it's one of those things, you know, I don't know how to define pornography, but you know it when you see it. And so in a sense, I don't know how to really talk about how, but it's something I feel. Look, I did a bunch of books with Jim Patterson. And the truth is I'm not really engaged with Patterson books anymore. But there are a few things I keep from my time with him. And one of them is the sense of pace that drives a book, even though this book, I think, is a little more leisurely paced and chapters go on a little more than I've normally let them and focused a lot more on character than perhaps some of my books, which are pretty speedy. But what you bring up is another thing that was really important to Jim and I think is vital no matter how far-reaching your literary ambition is. To me, readers, I mean, there's at least 10 books on my night table, and I probably won't read 6 of them. Or if I read them, I'll just dabble in them and then move on. So to me, you have to engage people, and the best way to engage people is to define what the plight is that your hero is going through and get them aboard quickly. And the ways to do that is either through voice or through a situation where something dire happens and now you're sort of riding along with them and rooting for them, or give them a dog or something. I'm just teasing. But, you know, there, whatever tricks of the trade, whatever sort of tradecraft you use, I don't really want to learn to like my character on page 150 and go through sort of the dynamic arc of character movement. I want my readers to be invested.
Right. And I think it's an important point. I just read a novel a few weeks ago and I was on page about 80, I think. So I'm well invested by that time. And I found out that the protagonist I imagined as tall and dark was actually short and fair, you know? That's another thing.
Well, I mean, that sort of stuff should be handled early regardless.
Really?
I don't think you should have your visual image at some point. But I look, you know, you may have to finish books because you're going to be talking to us at some point or get 3/4 of the way through books. But a lot of people, you know, you're either in it or you're not. And people have a lot of choices today. And there's a lot of people grabbing for share of mind. So I want my readers engaged and engaged quickly.
Right. So real quick, because we're almost at the end of our segment here, but I just want to read the first sentence of the first chapter here. Your protagonist says, I read somewhere that every life is the story of a single mistake and then what happens after, whether it's brought into the light and owned up to or left buried in the darkness. Is that something you believe?
Yes. I whether it's a single mistake, I think there's sort of a defining moment in all lives, and the script of our lives comes from that. Now, sometimes you can own up to mistakes and they can be sort of expiated or owned up to, and then life goes on in a different direction. But we all know, whether it's in the news every day or in our own lives, the degree to which there's a lie or there's something wrong in our life and we keep papering it over or we don't admit it or we don't deal with it and we let it fester, and then it becomes sort of the things that rule the narrative of our lives. So, I actually do feel it. So this one isn't fiction. I actually do believe that.
Right. So you've been doing this a long time now. What do you know now that you wish you'd known when you first started out?
Well, Well, the industries, the big thing for me is how the tide of the industry is totally, totally shifted. And I don't know that it's so much a question of something like, I know that now, you know, perhaps I wish that I had sort of mastered where the industry is going. And it is just so digitally generated at this point. And we all have our websites and we all have our Facebook pages and everything. But somehow the work starts, should have started earlier for me in that sense, because you know, we're now in a situation where only about a third of my books are actually read in print. And,
wow.
And I think I reflect, you know, most of it, it reflects the side of the industry that I'm on. I don't think I'm uncommon. Mm-hmm. So it's just an extraordinary tidal change in how the industry is done. And in that sense, it's just thrown a huge amount of both the marketing and the responsibility on individual authors. I'm sure a lot of your readers are aware, I'll just, you know, quickly, of what's going on now between, you know, Amazon and, you know, one of the key publishers out there. And in terms of this sort of, you know, death fight of control of money, you know, and the ways that Amazon is fighting back against Hachette, you know, by not really allowing its books to be sold. And there's just so many different currents to how the industry is going today that when I say it isn't as fun as it used to be, it isn't as fun because most authors always feel a lack of self-control because you put your books out there and it's no longer sort of yours to bring home. You know, you write it, but then other people have to sell it and make it successful.
Right,
but now
right.
That's even more so because there's just so many things that are interfering with the direct relationship between a reader and an author.
Right.
So,
well,
different environment.
Andrew Gross, I thank you so much for being with us today. Just very quickly, your website is andrewgrossbooks.com, andrewgrossbooks.com, and listeners can find out more about Andrew and his work there. His latest book, a thriller, Everything to Lose. Can't wait to finish it. Thanks for being with us. Thanks for being with us. Live well, live strong.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.